is Deb Hoadley from the Massachusetts Library System. So I want to thank you all for joining our call today. This call is to answer questions related to the MLS statewide ebook platform and content, RFP. Again, we are recording this for reference, and it will be posted on the MLS site where the RFP was located. And also, if you have further questions after today's session, you may send them to the ebook RFP at masslibsystem.org email, and we will be posting the questions and a summary of all the answers on our website. So at this time, I would like to introduce people who are here as part of the statewide committee for the ebook project. Again, I'm Deb Hoadley. I'm the project leader from MLS. And we have in the room with me
Greg Pronovitz, MLS Executive Director.
And Carolyn Miller, MLS Assistant
Director. And at this time, Cindy and Paul, can you introduce yourselves?
Cindy Roach, I'm the Head of Library Development and Advisory at the Board of Library Commissioners, and Paul Kissman is our Information Technology Specialist, who just had to step out of the room, but he'll be back in a second.
Okay. I do hear that I'm seeing some people are having a little hard time hearing. Hopefully, you can look up and see. It looks like on our end, everything is fine as far as the microphone, so if you can check your audio and make sure the speakers are up, I will be watching that chat for any other audio problems. Are there any other people from the project online with us today?
Hi, Deb. It's Jackie Rafferty.
Hi, Jackie. Anybody else? Okay. So I wanted to just review the scope of the ebook pilot project. The goal of the Massachusetts ebooks pilot project is to identify, implement, and test a solution for providing ebook borrowing to users throughout the Commonwealth via a single user-friendly discovery platform offering a broad selection of titles. This will also have the goal of connecting users directly with authors, booksellers, and publishers. The results of the proof of concept will be evaluated to determine its feasibility as a long-term statewide solution. So the first phase of the pilot project was to include 50 libraries of various types and sizes, including publics, academic libraries, school libraries, and special libraries. The startup collection will consist of approximately 10,000 titles, which will be selected to accommodate the needs library types have represented by the pilot participants. The collection will serve users of all ages and will serve a variety of learning needs. The first phase will launch in June of 2013 and end at the end of December 2013. If at the conclusion of the first phase, evaluation results show that the concept appears to be viable for the long term and all high-impact problems identified by development partners have been successfully addressed, other libraries who wish to participate will be added on in an ongoing basis. I also wanted to just review a few of the deadlines. Today's call. And obviously it's happening today. Thank you again for joining us. April 1st, our questions will be accepted through 4 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. By April 8th, a summary of the email questions will be posted as well as this recording. And then April 29th, the RFP responses are due. After that, we will be asking vendors, selected vendors, to make presentations. The dates are May 16th and 17th, and those could be done either virtual or in person. So at this time, I would like to open up for questions that our vendors may have.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello, this is Joan Kuklinski.
Hi, Joan. Joan is one of our committee members. Are there any questions from vendors at this time?
Yes, this is Lynn at Mackin. I have a couple of quick little questions. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My first question is in regard to charge one versus charge two, and I know that you had indicated that you would encourage us to bid on one or the other or both. For charge one, which is your platform that you're looking for, can that also include the titles within that portion of it?
Yes, it can.
Okay. So then we could just provide one proposal for you.
Yes, as long as you make reference that you're answering both charges and that it can be in one form.
Okay. My other question is regarding the amount of libraries that's going to be included. Within your proposal, you indicated your MLS membership has 126 academic and the numbers for all of the different levels of the school. Your state does have way more than that for libraries. Will this always include only the MLS member libraries, and that's the inference you mean on a statewide basis, or would it go outside of the MLS membership?
Hi, this is Greg, MLS director. We intend this to be a statewide project. However, our services to libraries that are not members is very limited. Right now, we have statewide content that we provide across the state, but we only provide direct links for our member libraries.
Okay.
So the service that would be available statewide outside of our membership would be more of an indirect method that a patron may need to go to their public library in order to get it, because a school that wasn't a member was not eligible for customized services.
Okay. I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. Have you guys identified a level of funding that would be available for this project?
We thought that was going to be the first question. Yes.
I waited a little.
We do. We have at least $400,000 for the first 18 months of the project, and I'm optimistic that we can raise more than $600,000 by the time the end of that 18 months comes up. So between $400,000 and $600,000+ for 18 months.
Okay. And then in the proposal, you indicate that you had done some research work prior to putting out the bid, and you indicated that you have already seen some platforms. Can you tell me who you have already seen or which platforms you've already been looking at?
I don't know if we can remember them all offhand, and it might be offensive to one of our vendors if we omit them, but I think you can guess who we've talked to. Library ebook platform providers, we got in touch with them and did webinars, and it was just an investigative stage of the process to help us put together the best RFP. So I don't feel confident that I can give you a comprehensive list at this time.
But you're pretty much saying that you've looked at pretty much most of the platforms in the industry that are out there. Is that a safe?
I would say we looked at 7 or 8 of them, maybe not.
All right. That's all I had at the moment. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining the call.
Hi. This is Steve Schenfeld from Cognizant. Hello.
Yes. We can hear you. Go ahead.
How are you? Do you have any preferences? Is there any concern about how this project would be delivered? If we leverage a global delivery model versus an all on-site, on-premise, is any of that an issue in our response?
I'm not really sure I understand your question. Could you say that again?
Okay, so the question is where we deliver our work from.
Right.
So services. The services, where the services are delivered. If some portion of our services are off-site or even offshore, meaning outside the U.S., is that allowed? Or is, you know, do you have any particular rules of engagement on that?
The RFP prefers direct services from a vendor. The location of the vendor is not critical to us. It's the quality of the service that's important. If some work is subcontracted, we would need to know what that was, and we would need to approve that.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm not implying anything would be subcontracted. We have personnel. We have employees throughout the globe. That's why I was asking that. In other words, so we would have potentially some people on premise in your location. We might have some people working out of South America, some people working out of India. As long as they're all employees, that is not an issue is what I'm hearing.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, this is Jill from Brain Hive.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Say, we are a service for school libraries only, and so I wondered whether or not we would be able to submit a proposal based on the fact that it couldn't be rolled out to either academic or public libraries.
Okay. Jill, yes, we do want proposals from content providers that provide for one or more of our target audiences. And we know that some vendors are limited to one or another or a multi or two, and we foresee the possibility of multiple content vendors to meet the needs that we have. So we would encourage you to submit a bid that was for school library content.
Okay, perfect. I wasn't quite sure with the wording in the proposal whether or not it would be rolled out to others, and we just have that one caveat, and so that's really great news. So thank you. That was my only question.
Thanks for joining us all.
This is Louise Bloomfield from InfoBase Learning. I have a follow-up question to that one.
Okay, go ahead.
And it's really whether, I mean, I think the response to the previous question indicated that, or at least implied that more than one ebook content vendor could be considered simultaneously for this RFP. Is MLS envisioning only one platform, or are more than one platform also perhaps envisaged?
We are looking at all the possibilities. We're not ruling out that we would have multiple platforms and or multiple content providers. So until we see what is available, we want to meet the needs of all the libraries, we're not sure, you know, the possibility is that we would be able to have more than or need to have more than one provider for platform and content.
Thank you very much.
Another question? Let me just check the chat. Are there any further questions from our vendors?
Hello, this is Denine from Ingram. We had a question, is this a shared collection to be shared, you know, across all the members, or is this more like a consortial buying group that individuals will buy their own material?
It would be a shared collection.
Okay. And on your two forms for charge one and charge two, both have the same questions. We wondered for the charge two form, since it was content only, were there to be some different questions? Sometimes it didn't. We just wondered because it seemed like there would be some different questions specific to content as opposed to the questions that were being asked.
There are some different needs and goals that are outlined in each of the charges. The specs we kept the same so that there'd be consistency across asking. But the things that would be different were numbers 5 and 6 for specifically the content in charge 2 for acquisitions and access to the libraries and the compatibility with various platforms. So questions 5 and 6 are a little different from charge 1 to charge 2.
And let me add that some of the questions apply much more strongly to platform and some more strongly to content. So if you're going to reply to one or the other or submit multiple bids, that there's a provision for just putting not applicable in a box that for a specification that doesn't really apply to your proposal. So that's something that we're expecting to see in proposals.
Okay. And we had a few questions on the form for charge one on the specifications. D8 on page 9 of 24, it says the default discovery hides materials for which the authenticated patron has no right. We just wanted to clarify, is that an individual patron at a library, or is that just the library does not have rights to that particular material? Perhaps they, you know, were not a member or hadn't. You know, purchased as that group.
Can you give us the number again, the question?
Yes, it's D-8, page 9 of 24 on charge 1.
Thank you. Just a second to look at that.
So this section of questions is about discovery that would mainly apply to a platform. And although we're looking at statewide access to things, this question got in there, and it at some point may be appropriate that a platform will provide materials to one group or another of users, but not to all users. And if does your platform have the ability when someone's authorized for certain content, can we just show that content to them and not show them content that they don't have permission to use? Does that make sense?
Yes, that clarifies for us. Mm-hmm. On the publishing repository questions, this would be page 14. Sorry, I'm trying to find my right one. I'm sorry, it's the rights, permissions, and licensing. Page 17, RPL3. It allows a display even if the user doesn't have the right to download it. We just wanted clarification that we were understanding that. Basically, you're talking about some books are not available for download because of the publisher. You could still see them, but you could check them out, use them at the library. You can't download them to a personal device. We just want to make sure we're reading this question correctly.
Yeah. Paul, do you want to jump in on this one? Well, I'll jump in on it then. This is the opposite of what we just talked about. So in a case where, let's say, someone signs into the system but is not authorized to download from whatever location they're in. We want an explanation of how that will look, how that will work. if material that a person is not authorized to use becomes a viewable. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
I think it also has to do with the driven acquisitions as well. So if there's a collection where we can, you know, we have access to a collection of materials, but we didn't necessarily purchase them, but the patrons have asked to, you know, acquire it, then they could still see it, and then there'd be the chance to purchase it. So some of that is from a patron-driven model.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. That makes sense. Then we can address that. On RPL4, right underneath that, the system allows the format of downloaded content at each level. Is that when the patron goes to check out, download the material, do they choose, say, like EPUB version versus PDF version? Are you talking at that level?
What we're looking for is a description of which formats are available in your response, so that if multiple formats are available, specify that.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And then our final question is on RPL7. It says the system allows the format of the transferred content at each level. I just want to clarify with the word transfer. Is this transferred by the, like, download by a patron to a personal device, or is this when you're talking about transfer between platforms?
In this case, it's following up on the transfer to a device related to question RPL5.
Okay. Thank you. That's what we wanted to clarify.
You have a question in chat on the person is asking the platform that they have currently, or they don't have a platform currently that's going to be ready until July, and they know that they'll miss the pilot program starting in June, and so they won't be able to submit an RFP. Will they be able to submit afterwards should we decide to roll this out to the entire state?
At this point, we're looking for something to implement as a pilot project, and I don't think we'll be accepting proposals after the pilot project is launched unless changes in our plans are made. But I would suggest if you have a platform that you can launch in July, if we get delayed, it could be considered. So I wouldn't not submit because of that. July is very close to the June implementation startup that we're thinking about. Maybe you can push it up to June.
Are there other questions?
I'm sorry, I joined the call late. Will a summary of the questions and answers be distributed after the call?
Yes, we are recording our call today that will be posted on our website where the RFP is located, and we will be accepting questions through Monday at 4 o'clock, and then we'll summarize all of that and post them by April 8th. So everything will be online.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Please remember you can submit them through email through Monday, the 1st. Hey, thank you everybody for joining our call today.